Hello, on this week's program, we look ahead to the 2006 Philadelphia Live Arts and Fringe Festival and speak with co-founder and producing director Nick Stuccio. We drop in on rehearsals for Currently Franklin, the story of a paperboy. James Sugg drops by to perform one of the pieces in his song cycle, The Sea. Jason Pfeiffer previews a comedy of manners called P's and Q's. And since an essential part of the Live Arts Festival is unlikely stages and venues, we look at The Guided Tour, a play that takes place on a passenger trolley moving throughout the city. That's all ahead this morning, creatively speaking.
Support for Creatively Speaking comes from the Greater Philadelphia Tourism Marketing Corporation, the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, and the listeners of WRTI.
In 1996, Nick Stuccio and Eric Schoeffer returned from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with an idea to create a similar event in Philadelphia. 1 year later, they were up and running. And in the 10 years since, the festival, or as it is now festivals, the curated performances now go under the umbrella of the Live Arts Festival, has expanded from 5 to 16 days, with almost 50,000 people attending hundreds of performances throughout the city. I spoke with Nick Stuccio earlier this week and first asked him if all of his ambitions for the festival had now been realised, or were there still parts of his dream that were as yet unfulfilled?
My first reaction is no, we've not achieved that dream yet, but it's a constant pursuit. I think, looking back on it 10 years, 11 years ago, we saw a couple of things and that are still very fundamental to what we do. One is this social framework for arts going. So the thing that you notice about Edinburgh, and we still remember it today, is fun and highly social. It's a party. Every little venue, and you know there's big giant theaters, down to little tiny street theaters, each one of them has a bar or has a coffee shop, or you can socialize, you can hang out. It's about interface between audience and artist, less formality between those two groups. And so we've always remembered that's the magic of Edinburgh. If you can marry all that fun social stuff, which you can on, say, like a first Friday in Old City, that's a brilliant example of that.
Yeah.
Combining that with arts going, it's almost like a rouse, like guys, you know, come down and have fun. And oh, by the way, you're going to get to see some world-class art making at the same time. That was absolutely what we stole from Edinburgh. The other thing is about barriers, I think. The ticket prices are reasonable. That's one of our things we've never changed still today. $20. You can see something at the Kimmel Center for $20. Mm-hmm. And also other kinds of barriers, that shows are not really long. Or this idea of the red chairs experience, that you have to go into a big fancy theater, be quiet, unwrap your candy before the show starts. You know, for me, that's a barrier. I'd prefer to go to a club, have a beer, and hang out and be social with your friends. Maybe you can talk, you can laugh, and you're out of there in 53 minutes. Those are barrier reducers that make it fun, make it enjoyable, make it really social.
In terms of how the Fringe and now the Live Arts Festival has evolved, Edinburgh has now grown to be largely a venue for comedy, whereas a lot of other forms are very prominent in the Fringe. Was that part of the plan, or is that just how it came about?
I think it's a market-driven system. Comedy is something that the British love, I guess. So that's what's happening. Here in Philadelphia as well, there's 150 Fringe shows. And if they chose all to be Shakespeare or comedy or rodeo or whatever, then so be it. Again, we don't control anything. I think, though, because this office has this curatorial judgments it makes on the Live Arts Festival, it does, I think, lead the way a bit. And artists, to some degree, follow it in terms of the notion of taking some risks. This is really not the time to make a lovely, you know, production of some lovely Tennessee Williams play. This is the time to maybe take a Tennessee Williams play and do it in, you know, in a van in a parking lot, you know, to really take some risks. So I think the Fringe participants, again, we don't control or curate or vet any of that. They do follow that lead to some degree, and I think it's working nicely, and it works out for audiences as well.
I asked earlier what your dream was and how close you were to attaining it. Tell me what would be, if I gave you the crystal ball or the magic wand, what would the timeline be? Well, but first of all, what would the fan dream be, or is it constantly changing?
Well, I think to really serve artists and audiences well, first of all, to have every venue, every seat filled all the time, of course. Any presenter will tell you that. But I think what we do, and about half of the work, or increasingly more than half of the work we present, is kind of is not in a traditional theater. The notion of traditional or typical presentations in a black box theater, we like and we'll do those. And again, those works are filled with extraordinary content. But we love going out into this great city of neighborhoods like Edinburgh and all these amazing architectural jewels that we have here in Philadelphia and putting work on in the most extraordinary settings that we could find. That would be an aspiration. I can imagine 20 years from now that we could put a work on the old decommissioned battleships in the naval yard. Or we could take, you know, a closed-off mine shaft somewhere in Fairmount Park and put a play on. I'd love to be able to have the resources and the wherewithal and the connections to access those really unusual settings and put world-class artists in them, and many of them from Philadelphia.
What will it take for that? Do you think that there is enough support in the city for the festival?
It's growing. We're now 10 years old. We've now we're about 15 times bigger than when we started the festival. So it's growing quickly every year. And we're slowly building the political will, building the connections, building the resource base. So we're getting smarter. We know we're smart enough to know what we don't know.
Producing director Nick Stuccio speaking with me earlier this week. The 10th annual Philadelphia Fringe and Live Arts Festivals begins on Friday. Currently Franklin, the story of a paper boy, was created by Sebastian Mundheim on a commission from Franklin and Marshall College while she was an artist in residence at the school in 2005. The piece follows Benjamin Franklin from his early childhood through his life as a printer, inventor, and diplomat. The set for the multimedia show, featuring dancers, comic actors, light and shadow play, is made almost entirely from paper. There's an intricate rolled cardboard printing press, billowing crepe paper backdrops, and various papier-mâché incarnations of the best-known founding father, and an eclectic soundscape co-created by sound designer James Sugg, who we'll hear from later in the program. Currently Franklin, the story of a paper boy, is being reworked for this year's Live Arts Festival. Earlier this week, I dropped in on rehearsals for the piece and spoke with its writer, director, designer, and performer, Sebastian Mundheim.
You know, my little blurb says, it's inventive, it's beautiful, it's short, and you might even learn something. And I think that's pretty much true. You know, I always think of education as a dirty word. It's just because it sounds like medicine. But I actually really like to have lessons myself and like to teach lessons, what I like to think about things. So I think about what the life lesson is, what kinds of little pieces of history might be good to learn. But then I really go and make something, I think, that's beautiful, that's in some ways indulgent. So it was never kind of like an educational piece, very good for you. The first cast was a very talented kind of slapstick comic actor ensemble. And I loved what they did, and I was also very interested in seeing what would happen if we explored movement a lot more and really looked at movement and sculpture. And so I asked two dancers, Kate Carr and Karen Bookbinder, and a physical theater actor, Aaron Muma, to come in and work with the animation. So it's not really puppetry, it's not really dance, it's something in between.
James's newspaper, The New England Courant, was delivered to 500 people a week. And people read the paper. And the people argued about ideas in the paper. Benjamin saw the words move between people. And as the words moved, the ideas changed their shape.
The thing that stuck in my head was just this, the image of the print shop with all of the paper encircling. And again, sort of my idea of the water, you know, be like water, is very Japanese. And I made this paper set that looks pretty Japanese, actually, doesn't it?
It does.
So I started to really love the idea of just being in a performance space where you were just encircled with all of this really fragile hanging paper. And then I started to think, I really wanted to work with dancers, and I really wanted to work with this tension between what is ephemeral and what is physical. And so making this very fragile set and thinking about how historic icons are actually very fragile and require constant care. So I guess that there was that kind of visual tension that was interesting to me, this kind of very ephemeral representation of history with these very physical people manipulating that.
Benjamin realized he'd have to find the curiosity and adventure of the print shop somewhere else. And although Benjamin was smart and he'd saved money, it would be difficult to leave Boston without any contacts someplace else. Benjamin realized he would need some help.
Well, I'm indentured to my brother James, and no one will help me leave because it's wrong to break servitude. I know. I'll say I got entangled with a lowly woman, and that I had to leave town to get out of taking care of her.
Creepy, but it works.
What I love about this piece is that the whole of it is Franklin, in that what you see is what you get. It's inventive. There are all these mechanics to it. And I think you walk away from it. I hope you walk away from it. I walk away from it when I'm in it, feeling like I was in this magical world of possibility where you don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know that that object is going to be able to be used in that way, that it's going to be able to illustrate that thing, that something as simple as an overhead projector on a set of casters can create a whole world of light. And to me, that's pretty Franklin.
So if Franklin snuck into the back of the room, would he, A, recognize himself, and B, would he like it? I suspect he'd like it, because it is quite Franklin-esque.
It's pretty Franklin in that there are all these eclectic elements. It's got some bad humor in it. It's the language is kind of sparse, which he would appreciate. Yeah, the girls are cute. It's got some cool mechanical elements. It's got some things used in unusual, unexpected ways. And he was a diplomat, so he'd never say he didn't like it anyway.
Sebastian Montheim, the writer, director, designer, and performer in Currently Franklin, The Story of a Paperboy, which you can see at the Christchurch Neighborhood House at 20 North American Street in Philadelphia, beginning on Saturday next and running through Monday, September 4th.
You're listening to Creatively Speaking on WRTI.
The saying, mind your P's and Q's, has been around for centuries, but the origins of the phrase are unclear. One theory suggests it refers to pints and quarts, reminding sailors, for instance, to watch how much they drink so they're able to get back to their ship on time. Some say the phrase relates to children learning how to spell, or deals with a typesetter being careful not to mix up the similar-looking letters. Still others think it could simply be an abbreviation for mind your pleases and thank yous. Whatever the origins of the idiom, it's generally agreed that the meaning has to do with being on your best behavior, minding your manners, and paying close attention to detail. When good manners and etiquette are not heeded, it can sometimes make for socially awkward moments. And that's exactly what one show in the Live Arts Festival sets out to explore. How do and should people behave when they're outside their comfort zones? The festival work is called P's and Q's, and Creatively Speaking's Jason Pfeiffer recently talked with the show's creators about developing the piece. Here's his very well-mannered report.
Leanne Etzel describes etiquette and manners as being both useful and intimidating to her. This tension inspired her to produce a rough 15-minute version of P's and Q's for the 2002 Philly Fringe Festival. The work generated a lot of discussion among Etzel and her friends over the course of a few years. So when Etzold was recently awarded an Independence Foundation Fellowship, she chose to return to the P's and Q's project, extending and reimagining it. The result is an unconventional work that examines issues like the nuances of sitting down to a dinner table, handling uncomfortable jokes, and as demonstrated in this scene with actor Gwen Rooker, the art of greeting people.
One of the most effusive forms of greeting to arise in recent years has been that of social kissing between casual acquaintances. The most common problems are, first, if going along with the practice, which cheek to offer first, and second, how to avoid the entire process if one does not desire contact beyond the handshake. If you prefer to avoid the entire process...
With a cast of six performers under the direction of Leanne Etzold, P's and Q's is very much a collaborative project. Many aspects of the show are developed by the group in rehearsals, which are still going on right now. Yet while the final product is still being worked out, Etzold has a definite sense of how the show will feel.
The piece itself seems to be one of those educational film strips from the 40s and 50s, up actually through the 60s. They still played them in health class in high schools. And it seems that these performers are trapped inside this film strip in a sort of Twilight Zone experience at a dinner party. Fortunately, we found one of these film strips that was called Dinner Party 1945 and was eerie how similar it was to our show and the feel we wanted.
Bob is hungry and the soup looks good. He is using his company manners, but as we see, he is doing at least three things wrong. Now that the soup is served, Betty sees that the crackers are passed. Floyd passes the crackers to Dorothea before he helps himself. Should he have helped himself first or not?
See, this is the thing. They ask a lot of questions about what you should or shouldn't do, but the beautiful thing about this film strip is that they never answer the questions. And so we're doing the same thing in a way. We're asking questions and hoping the audience will engage in a way that they answer them for themselves.
Part of the process of developing a piece that presents thoughtful questions about manners and etiquette involved the cast taking a field trip. Earlier this year, they piled into a van and drove down to South Carolina for a one-day crash course at the Charleston School of Protocol and Etiquette. The institution is mainly geared towards training people in business etiquette, but the school agreed to host a session for the Philadelphia-based theater ensemble. One of the performers, Amanda Schoonover, didn't find what she expected.
I thought we were going to go to a place and walk around with books on our heads, and I was kind of like, oh, this is so weird. And we got there, and it wound up being one of the most interesting experiences.
Instead of gleaning obscure tips on how to act sophisticated among the upper crust of society, Schoonover says the course highlighted the perhaps obvious but profound golden rule: treat others as you'd like to be treated.
There was a fear that etiquette is sometimes used against people to segregate or to be better. Etiquette is about including and making people feel comfortable and welcome.
Dramaturge Greg Giovanni, a researcher and advisor for the P's and Q's production, was also part of the group that traveled to South Carolina. He calls himself an etiquette buff, long fascinated with etiquette writers like Emily Post and Judith Martin, also known as Miss Manners. Giovanni finds it interesting to compare past standards of etiquette with today's protocols.
The two things that really stand out is that new etiquette has been invented and had to be invented because living arrangements are different. Family arrangements have changed. You know, everyone has a stepfather or stepmother and how to deal with those situations in weddings and stuff like that, where that's when everyone gets worried about etiquette, is during weddings. And the other thing that stands out is that nothing really has changed. I mean, you know, kindness to each other is timeless, and how one exhibits kindness out of just purity of soul.
Many of the ensemble members in P's and Q's come from performance groups like Pig Iron Theater Company and New Paradise Laboratories. They're known for doing physical theater, which tends to be much more movement rather than dialogue-based. Leanne Etzold says she very purposefully sought out these performers for her new project.
I think the interesting thing about bringing physical actors into this kind of piece is because so much communication happens with just the body. Socially, reading body language is a huge thing. You can pick up a lot from somebody by what they don't say. And so we're experimenting with that quite a bit also. But I also wanted to explore how far we could go with the ridiculous and how far we could go outside of our own comfort levels as far as what is acceptable physicality. And so we're playing with that a bit. I think it's safe to say that the Live Arts Festival right now is the perfect venue for this. It's a unique collaboration, really featuring some of the most interesting artists in Philly that have already made work in other avenues and now are being brought together.
In keeping with the Live Arts Festival tradition of presenting many shows in unusual locations, the dinner party performed by the P's and Q's cast will be staged in the dining room of the Philadelphia Ethical Society in Center City's Rittenhouse Square. Of course, anyone is cordially invited to attend, but if you go, just be sure to mind your, well, you know.
Creatively Speaking is Jason Pfeiffer. P's and Q's runs from September 5th through September 16th. James Sugg is a well-known actor, sound designer, and composer in the Philadelphia theater community. His most recent creation with Aaron Posner, A Murder, A Mystery and a Marriage, a Mark Twain musical melodrama, was recently nominated for 10 Barrymore Awards. For this year's festival, he's created a song cycle called The Sea. As part of the process of creating this work, Sugg spent 2 weeks on a freighter vessel recording the sights and sounds of the real life of sailors. He came into our studios earlier this week to give us a quick sneak preview of one song from The Sea.
The Sea is about Captain Owen Chase and follows him from a young man to his last day on this earth. And this is Owen at his youngest moment singing about his fascination with the sea as he looks out his window where he number crunches. It's called Down, Down, Down.
Over my ledger I can see the giant ships go down the bay. There's no one of them that holds my heart aboard as stowaway. And one will sail the China Sea, one will swing around the horn. And oh, I'd be a happy lad if I were only sailor born. I'd go down, down, down to the boats, away from the green into the blue. All of my family planted firm, my wife and child upon the land. But I'm gonna dive and ride that tide and hope that they will understand. I'd go down, down, down to the boats, away from the green into the blue. Ocean winks while I'm not looking, then pretends that I'm not here. She tugs my sleeve and turns away from me. When I sleep, she's all I hear. One golden day I'll break my bond, loose my books and wander free. And then another pale-faced lad will add my figures up for me. 'Cause I'll be down, down, down to the boats, away from the green into the blue. I'd go down, down to the boats, away from the green into the blue.
James Sugg, Down, 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 from his song cycle The Sea. It runs for 3 nights at the Wilma Theatre in Philadelphia beginning Thursday, September 7th. Performances are at 10:30. These days, Center City Philadelphia is crowded not just with cars, SEPTA buses and pedestrians, but also tourist vehicles. There are horse-drawn carriages, motorized trolley-style buses, and let's not forget the noisy amphibious ducks encouraging passengers to quack at innocent pedestrians while taking a tour of the city's streets and its surrounding waters. But what do people get from these tours? What do they learn about the real life of the city as they whiz by the tourist hotspots? That's what playwright and director Bruce Walsh began to wonder during his 3 years as a Philadelphia tour guide. He felt like he would shuttle visitors to the typical places, deliver his rehearsed speech, and they would return to wherever they came from.
There's not really much desire to create something that's about people that live in this community. You know, it's like, oddly, you don't hear anything about the population that lives here. You only really hear about these, you know, icons.
So forget Franklin and don't worry about the bell. Visitors boarding the trolley at the Betsy Ross House for the next 3 weekends won't be getting that kind of tour. They'll be attending the theatre, and it'll be moving. Well, at least in the sense that the trolley will travel through the neighbourhoods of the playwright's life. Part of the Live Arts Festival, the show is appropriately called The Guided Tour, and there's at least one predictable aspect. It begins in tourist-filled Old City, Philadelphia.
And then we go down Arch Street to Broad. We go down Broad around City Hall. Then we go all the way down Broad Street, past Washington Avenue to Federal. We make a right on Federal Street. We go down to Point Breeze Avenue, and then we take Point Breeze, which is this beautiful diagonal street, that not that many diagonal streets in this city, that cross that goes all the way down to 24th and Snyder. And that's where I lived in 2003 when I was giving these tours. So we sort of visit where I lived.
The audience never gets off the bus. Through some of Philadelphia's lesser visited neighborhoods, Walsh's play unfolds. Rolling through Old City, the main character, a tour guide named Bruce, gives his tours and struggles with his shtick, as his British boss, played by Ryder Thornton, offers advice on how to be funny.
Bruce, right, you've got to have faith in the material. Here, listen to the way I say it. Listen to the inflection here. Now, folks, you might notice the inscription above the gate there. Does anyone read Chinese characters? Anyone know what it says? And Bruce, this is where you have to deadpan. You see, look at my face. Deadpan. It's crucial. Now, I know it's not something you get a lot of in American comedy. Now, they wouldn't know what a deadpan is, would they? They just like talking about fat mothers and butt cracks. I mean, that is the American way. And not much nuance needed for that sort of thing, I suppose. But you've got to give them that stone-cold look, like me. Look at my face. And then, folks, it's an ancient Chinese phrase. Loosely translated, it means tip your tour guides. You see?
I see, yes.
Rolling in the aisles.
Right.
Modeled after Walsh's personal experiences, the main character has problems with this daily routine. As the bus takes audiences deeper into South Philadelphia, Bruce's character finds himself unemployed and wondering what it's all about. Bruce, played by Sean Roach, then gives an unofficial but more personal tour.
Fast food restaurants, competing brands of fried chicken, gas stations, vacant lots. I'd caught my reflection in the tinted window of an SUV. My face was dark with stubble. I was growing a beard. Had I decided to do this? Did I want to grow a beard? I couldn't remember. Ah.
As the play unravels, so too do the neighborhoods, getting grittier and grittier as the bus and the character's life goes south. For producer and sound designer Dan Skolnick, the landscape is an essential part of the play.
We really use the city of Philadelphia as a set, and it's constantly moving, it's constantly changing, constantly giving us something to look at, and it makes our play better every time we do it.
With 3 shows a day, each show has different extras, meaning the unknowing people walking down the street, sitting on their stoops, and occasionally reacting to a tourist trolley rolling through neighborhoods that aren't accustomed to voyeurs. For Skolnick, it's the unknown variables that make this show even more interesting.
It can vary an enormous amount. Anything might happen. You know, we might hit traffic and have to give a spontaneous, improvised performance.
There are 3 actors in the play, but many characters. Sean Roach plays tour guide Bruce. Ryder Thornton and Alexis Bree Wildow play the various other characters and fantasies Bruce encounters on his journey, including a ukulele-strumming tag-along named Leg Warmers.
I know you belong to somebody new, but tonight you belong.
As the trolley turns around, heading back to Old City, the play continues, as does the tour. And it's just as playwright and director Bruce Walsh imagined during his days as a tour guide, an adventure through a Philadelphia that isn't marked in any guidebook, with a tour director who's allowed to tell his truth. Audience members will board the trolley at the Betsy Ross House at 239 Arch Street in Old City, Philadelphia. And that's it for now. Our program written and produced by Teresa Madden and myself, with thanks also this week to Megan Wendell. Creatively Speaking's theme music is by Bill Jolly. Our executive producer is Jack Moore, and I'm Jim Cotter.
Creatively Speaking is a production of WRTI in Philadelphia. Support for the program comes from the Greater Philadelphia Tourism Marketing Corporation, the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, and the listeners of WRTI.